Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Capital in the 21st Century is a work of economic history and political economy by Thomas Piketty that investigates how wealth and income inequality evolve over very long.
From France, Britain, the United States, and other countries.
Piketty examines patterns of capital accumulation from the 18th century to the present and argues that inequality is not an accidental deviation from capitalism but one of its recurring outcomes. The book became widely discussed because it combines historical evidence, statistical analysis, and normative argument in a single account of modern capitalism. Its central purpose is to explain why wealth tends to concentrate, why the 20th century was unusually equal by historical standards, and why inequality may rise again unless institutions respond. Rather than offering a narrow technical model, the book connects economics with history, taxation, democracy, education, and social structure. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the R-U-G mechanism as the book's central explanation of inequality. The most famous idea in the book is the relationship between the rate of return on capital and the rate of economic growth, usually summarized as R greater than G. Piketty argues that when wealth grows faster than output and wages, owners of capital can accumulate assets more quickly than the rest of society can expand its income base. Over time, this creates a self-reinforcing gap between those who already own property and those who depend mainly on labor. The book does not treat this as a temporary market malfunction. Instead, it presents the mechanism as a structural tendency of capitalism, especially in periods of slow growth. This matters because even moderate differences in returns can compound across generations. The result is not only higher inequality, but also stronger inheritance-based advantage, since past wealth becomes a more important source of future wealth than current work alone. Secondly, a long historical view shows that the 20th century was unusual, not the norm. Piketty's analysis is distinctive because it stretches across centuries rather than focusing only on recent decades. By comparing the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, he shows that high concentrations of wealth were common in Europe before the shocks of the world wars, and that the more equal distribution seen after 1945 was historically exceptional. This longer perspective changes the interpretation of post-war prosperity. Instead of reading mid-century equality as proof that capitalism naturally becomes fairer over time, the book suggests that wars, inflation, depression, taxation, and policy intervention temporarily reduced inherited fortunes and redistributed bargaining power. The historical method is essential to the argument because it prevents readers from treating recent experience as a universal pattern. It also shows that inequality is shaped by major political and economic disruptions, not only by abstract market forces. Thirdly, capital accumulation and inheritance matter more than meritocratic stories suggest. A major theme of the book is that capital accumulation tends to strengthen existing advantage. Wealth is not simply the reward for productivity or talent, it is also a stored claim on future income that can be passed from one generation to the next. Piketty emphasizes inherited wealth because large fortunes often grow through portfolio returns, real estate appreciation, dividends, and financial assets, while ordinary labor income grows much more slowly. This creates a society where the starting position matters greatly. The book, therefore, challenges the idea that open markets automatically produce merit-based outcomes. It also warns that when inheritance becomes a major source of social position, economic inequality can harden into social hierarchy. That is important not only for distribution, but also for opportunity, since unequal ownership can affect education, political influence, and access to networks. In this sense, the book links economic inequality to broader forms of stratification. Fourthly, education and institutional policy can offset inequality, but not automatically. Although the book is often read as a pessimistic account of capitalism, it also identifies counterforces. Piketty argues that the diffusion of knowledge, broader access to education, and skill development can support convergence between incomes and social groups. However, he is careful to note that these forces do not operate by themselves. They depend on public institutions, educational policy, access to training, and the capacity of states to spread opportunity. This distinction is important because it rejects the idea that economic modernization alone will solve inequality. Growth can raise living standards while still allowing wealth concentration to continue. The book therefore treats education not as a moral slogan, but as a structural policy lever. More equal access to human capital can reduce the long-run dominance of inherited wealth, but only if institutions actively support it. This makes political choice central to the book's analysis rather than optional or secondary. Lastly, the book moves from diagnosis to reform through progressive taxation and democratic safeguards. Piketty does not stop at describing inequality. He proposes responses aimed at limiting excessive wealth concentration. His best-known recommendation is a progressive tax on wealth, supported by high marginal taxation of income and capital at very high levels. The purpose is not to punish success, but to prevent large fortunes from growing faster than the economy without constraint. In his view, unchecked accumulation can distort democracy by concentrating political influence alongside economic power. That is why the policy discussion in the book extends beyond efficiency and into institutional stability. A society with extreme inequality may lose the ability to make collective decisions on fair terms. The reform proposals are controversial, but they are integral to the book's logic because the diagnosis implies that market outcomes alone are insufficient. By linking taxation, transparency, and democratic legitimacy, the book offers a political response to a structural economic problem. In conclusion, Capital in the 21st Century is best suited for readers interested in inequality, economic history, public policy, and the long-run behavior of capitalist societies. Economists will value its data-rich historical approach, while policymakers and educated general readers will benefit from its clear attempt to explain why inequality persists and why it matters for democracy. The book is especially useful for readers who want more than a short-term commentary on current markets. It asks how wealth behaves across generations and how institutions shape those outcomes. What makes it stand out from many books on inequality is its unusual scale of evidence and its willingness to connect empirical research with large political questions. It is not only a critique of inequality, but also a historical account of how capitalism evolves and a policy argument about how societies might constrain extreme concentration. Even for readers who disagree with its prescriptions, it remains a major reference point because it changed the terms of debate about capital, inheritance, and the future distribution of wealth. If you would like to support Thomas Piketty, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.